Several U.S. cities witnessed protests and unrest following the acquittal of a white teenager who killed two people during anti-racism demonstrations last year. Hamas says Britain's move to blacklist the resistance group encourages the Israeli regime to continue its atrocities against Palestinians. And Indian-controlled Kashmir observes a shutdown, reaction to the killing of civilians in a recent gun battle. This is Mies. It's good to have you with us. Anger boiling in the U.S. after court acquits white teen Kyle Rittenhouse of murder and the fatal shooting of two men during anti-racism protests last year. Following the ruling, people took to the streets in several cities from New York to Oakland to protest the verdict. The demonstrators called Rittenhouse's acquittal a failure of the justice system. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio also reacted, saying to call the verdict a miscarriage of justice is an understatement. Civil rights and gun control groups denounced the verdict and criticized the U.S. justice system as broken. President Joe Biden said the verdict leaves many Americans, including himself, feeling angry and concerned, but called on everybody to be peaceful. The Wisconsin court ruled that Rittenhouse acted in self-defense during violent anti-racism protests in Kenosha in August 2020. His acquittal has also raised debates about gun rights and the boundaries of self-defense in the U.S. Commentator Kayla Popuche says the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse shows increasing polarization in the U.S. and could affect the nation's trust in the American government in all facets.
Precedent that was set in case law, which is ultimately extremely dangerous. But it is a foreshadowing of the deep division, the polarization that is increasing and getting worse in the United States. And so it is absolutely defining. It is absolutely, momentous, and it causes a lot of questions. A lot of questions and a lot of doubt in faith in the justice system. But more and more, there's more growing apathy, distrust, and zero confidence in every thought process of the state in the United States government, not just the judicial system, but the carceral system, the legal system, in every faucet, the confidence in the United States and the American government as it is right now becomes less and less.
Indian-controlled Kashmir is observing yet another shutdown, this after a pro-independence group called for a day-long strike to protest the killing of civilians in an alleged gun battle in Srinagar on Monday. Our correspondent Shana Bhatt reports.
People in Indian-controlled Kashmir have closed businesses, shops and other routine activities following a shutdown call by the pro-freedom outfit Hurriyat Conference over the recent civilian killings in a suspected encounter in Srinagar earlier this week. The streets of Srinagar appeared deserted and guarded by the government forces. Since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, New Delhi's crackdown on pro-freedom groups and its activities has capped the space with dissent here, thus adding to the frustrations among the local residents. Analysts call it an enforced silence. The shutdown comes 4 days after the killing of civilians in a suspected encounter in Indian-controlled Kashmir's capital city, Srinagar. Denouncing the police claims, the families of victims protested against the dubious killings and the secret burial of civilians. This forced Indian authorities to return the dead bodies to their respective families for a proper burial. Political leaders, social activists, and residents took to social media in support of victim families, urging authorities to conduct a probe into the killings. 14-year-old Noha Altaf has bid farewell to her father. What she is demanding now is justice.
Hamari body dena hamara basic right.
Decent burial was our right. They have done no favor to us. But now is the time for them to do justice. The culprits must be hanged for killing my innocent father, so that it sets an example and such incidents should never happen again. None in Kashmir must go through what we have gone through.
According to police, 4 people were killed in Monday's encounter. The bodies of 2 civilians have been handed over, while the 3rd civilian has been buried in an inaccessible area, and the identity of the 4th person remains unknown. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-controlled Kashmir.
The UK's move to label Palestinian resistance movement Hamas as a terrorist organization is drawing widespread condemnation. The Palestinian Authority says the UK took the measure at Israel's request. It says the designation is an unjustified aggression against the Palestinian people and will hamper reconstruction efforts in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran has also denounced the British measure. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says that Palestinians' rights cannot be trampled on by distorting facts. Hamas has condemned the UK's move as a crime against the Palestinian people.
The British Home Office's decision to consider Hamas a terrorist organization is a crime against our Palestinian people and all their history of a struggle, as well as a condemnation of the legitimate struggles of all free peoples against colonialism. This decision, if implemented, is considered a great political, moral, and legal sin committed by Britain, in addition to its first crime of establishing the Zionist entity and making the Balfour Declaration.
Hamas' spokesman said Britain's move encourages the Israeli regime to continue its atrocities against Palestinians. The UK decision adds the political wing of Hamas to an existing ban on the movement's military wing. Under the changes, any act of support for Hamas will be punishable by up to 14 years in prison. London has cited what it calls Hamas's significant terrorist capability, including access to extensive and sophisticated weaponry. That is why the group has been using its weapons to defend the Gaza Strip against Israeli aggression. We earlier talked to political activist Mutia Abu Musabeh about the UK designation of Hamas as a terror group. He believes the move will not prevent Palestinians from pursuing their right to fight the Israeli occupation of their land.
In fact, Hamas movement is a genuine part and an integral component of the national resistance of the Palestinian people. And that right of resisting the Israeli occupation actually is guaranteed by the international laws and legislations, and no one can deny the Palestinian people or deprive the Palestinian people of practicing their legitimate right of defending themselves amid the ongoing and the brutal Israeli occupation and the crimes perpetrated on a daily basis and the recurring matter against the Palestinian civilians. So this decision and this bill is actually considered as a disgrace to the British government, and I think it's disgraceful for the British government to put itself as a client state for the Israeli occupation to justify the Israeli crimes and the Israeli ongoing aggressions against the Palestinian people. And I think that if we want to refer to the real meaning of terrorism, I think the real meaning of terrorism actually is embodied in the Israeli occupation that leaves no crime uncommitted till this moment against the Palestinian people.
Families of missing people in Pakistan have once again slammed the government for what they call its lack of seriousness to recover their loved ones. Mohammed Touri has more from Karachi.
Rights groups and families of missing persons held a press conference in Karachi to once again voice their grave concerns over the non-recovery of their loved ones, slamming the government for its lack of seriousness in their recovery. Last Saturday, families of Shia missing persons changed their direction towards military offices known to be the real powerhouses in Pakistan. Victims' families are outraged over the law enforcement agencies who they now accuse for clamping down on their right to protest. They are calling on the government to prosecute those responsible for abduction of their loved ones in the court of law. The family says state institutions are open for talks with Takfiri terrorists who have killed over 70,000 Pakistanis but are not serious to recover missing persons.
From 2009, we are protesting for the safe release of my father, and I have knocked every door of justice to the Supreme Court, High Court, and on the Commission of Enforced Disappearance, but I didn't get any positive result, or yet still I don't know where my father is.
The first post-9/11 reported case of enforced disappearances was Dr. Afia, who was kidnapped from Karachi along with her three kids in 2003.
Those who at the end of the day come for the agreement, those who at the end of the day come for the negotiations that we have your men and we'll release them, let's say after 2 months, after 3 months, those are the real people. These agencies, these people who should not be named in this country, these people who are above the law, who are beyond the law, these are the real authorities, these are the real officers whose job is to whose job is to run this country, but and actually they are destroying this country.
Enforced disappearances is a chronic human rights violation in Pakistan, with more than 7,000 complaints of enforced disappearances since 2011, where the real number might be much higher than the official figure. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
Iranian naval forces have seized a foreign vessel carrying contraband fuel and waters off the country's southern coast. In a well-coordinated operation, the Iranian flotilla seized the ship off the coast of Parsian town in Hormozgan province. That's according to naval officials. They say that 11 crew members were on board the vessel. All have been handed over to local judicial authorities as part of legal proceedings. Officials say that over 150,000 liters of diesel was confiscated from the ship. Iran has time and again said that it seriously deals with fuel smuggling as part of efforts to protect its economy. In Australia, huge crowds have taken to the streets to protest against COVID-19 vaccination mandate and a pandemic bill. Several thousand anti-vaccination protesters marched through Melbourne's downtown. They also voiced anger over a pandemic bill that allows the state premier to declare a pandemic and state of emergency. Anti-vaccination protesters gathered also in Sydney, Brisbane, and other cities. Counter rallies were also organized by pro-vaccination protesters in several cities. Australia's vaccine program remains voluntary, but state authorities have applied vaccine mandates to certain jobs. They've also barred unvaccinated from certain public activities. Nearly 85% of Australians aged 16 and above have been fully vaccinated. Several people are wounded in the Dutch city of Rotterdam as police fire warning shots and water cannon to disperse a major protest against COVID restrictions. The demonstrators fought back, hurling rocks at officers and setting debris and cars on fire. Police have issued an emergency order and have shut down public transportation in the area. It came as hundreds gathered to voice their opposition to new coronavirus restrictions, including a health pass requirement to access indoor venues. The Netherlands is struggling against a new surge in coronavirus cases, which pushed daily infections to an all-time high Friday. UK inflation rate has hit the highest figure for almost a decade, with surging energy prices believed to be driving that increase. The country's central bank, the Bank of England, is under pressure to increase the interest rate in response. But experts are divided over the impact of that or any other measure on the steep rise in the cost of living. Saeed Kureza reports from London.
Feeling the pinch at gas stations, in restaurant bills, and even used cars. Wherever you look, prices in the UK are on the way up. And while prices rise for everyone, they affect some much more than others, especially those in dire straits. With costs skyrocketing, so too is demand for help.
In January, we're expecting lots of referrals when the children return back to school. For food parcels, emergency food parcels. So that number could increase again. I reckon it will increase drastically as the weeks go on.
Prices in the UK were more than 4% higher in October compared to the year before. Inflation is now at levels not seen in a decade, with the steep rise in gas and electricity bills being the biggest factors. The cost of secondhand cars has soared too, up more than a quarter since April, and putting gas in that car much more expensive than only 12 short months ago.
As scary as it is right now, a lot of economists are warning that the worst is yet to come, as energy price hikes are expected to push inflation past 5% next year. The Bank of England is under pressure to increase the interest rate in response. But the truth of the matter is that there are powerful global economic forces at play here, and any decision made by policymakers here, experts say, will have a limited impact.
They also say the increase in interest rates is now almost certain.
In real terms, interest rates have already gone up. A lot of the mortgage and loan costs have already risen some months ago as banks were taking action in advance of this. Secondly, we did not have a rate rise this month from the Bank of England, but the vote was actually much closer than people had thought. And actually, the Bank of England governor had actually been leading us up a garden path to really encourage us that there was going to be. So there was actually some significant disappointment that actually they had been almost fooled by this.
The fear at the start of the first lockdown was the long-term COVID-induced economic scarring. Today, the economy seems to be bouncing back. Employment figures are improving, but the country's inflationary ills are worsening, taking away from what's left in ordinary Britain's pockets. Saeed Kureza, London.
A new move. move in the U.S. risks fueling its already simmering tensions with Russia. U.S. Congress is considering whether to recognize the presidency of Vladimir Putin if he wins another term in office. Moscow says the U.S. is interfering in its internal affairs.
The long-standing rivalry between Russia and the United States has taken a new turn. This time, Washington is mulling whether or not to recognize the presidency of Vladimir Putin if he is re-elected. This is proposed in a cross-party resolution introduced by two U.S. congressmen. It calls for the U.S. to end its recognition of Vladimir Putin's presidency beyond his current term, which expires in May 2024. The bill claims that the recent amendments to the Russian Constitution, which enable the Russian president to run for another term, are legally void. The motion has drawn fierce condemnation from the Kremlin.
Every time we think there is nothing more absurd, aggressive, unfriendly, and unconstructive that can come from that side of the ocean, and every time we are wrong, unfortunately, this is a perfect demonstration not only to Russia, but to all countries of the world that the United States officially interferes in the internal affairs of other countries.
It was only a few years ago when I believe around 100,000 advertisements made on Western social media were enough cause to launch investigations, create this whole supposedly Russiagate scandal accusing Trump of some sort of collusion or whatever. This seems to be a vastly higher level of meddling into the affairs of a foreign country. So it seems very hypocritical on its surface.
But the U.S. is no stranger to getting involved in other nations' internal affairs. Just this Tuesday, President Joe Biden banned members of the Nicaraguan government from entering the United States. He alleged that Nicaragua's November 7 vote was rigged in favor of President Daniel Ortega. In response, the Nicaraguan Congress denounced Washington for violating the principle of non-intervention in its foreign policy. Washington's failure to recognize the elected leaders of such nations as Syria and Venezuela has also drawn strongly worded condemnations for years. The U.S., however, presses on with the interference, which runs contrary to the Charter of the United Nations.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Please bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
has reached ever new technological heights unprecedented in history. We can now communicate and interact with those halfway around the world with ease, manage workloads with a click of a finger, or access information and news in a matter of seconds. Perhaps a world without electronic technology would be unimaginable. But this miraculous blessing has a very, very dark and toxic underbelly. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. The electronic technology we are so dependent on creates waste unseen in the Earth's history. Every year, up to 50 million tons of electronic waste, computers, television sets, mobile phones, and household appliances are thrown away by consumers in the developed countries. 75% of this waste disappears from the legal recycling circuit, much of it dumped illegally in the third world. Stay with us as this week's documentary spans the world to reveal how greed and corruption are ruining the globe's legal recycling systems, damaging the environment, creating security risks, and endangering human health.
We produce up to 50 million tons of e-waste every single year. And our discarded appliances increasingly end up in places like this dump site in Africa. We first came here 3 years ago, while risking serious health problems such as cancer and brain damage. Since then, the situation has worsened dramatically. The amount of e-waste coming into Africa has almost doubled. And also in Europe, South America, and Asia, the discarded symbols of our modern lifestyle are corroding landscapes and poisoning the soil, water, and air.
It's a crime. I mean, this is a crime of mammoth proportions.
E-waste trafficking is huge and said to be bigger than the drugs trade. Even though the export of e-waste has been banned for more than 30 years, thousands of e-waste containers cross the oceans every year. And the toxic tide is set to rise even further because in spite of the crisis, the sale of electronics is booming and emerging markets are coming on board. All contribute to a growing mountain of e-waste to which we can no longer turn a blind eye.
It's like a doctor looking at a patient bleeding profusely and saying, oh, it's not so bad. When I hear people like that, I say, just go. Just take a plane and go look for yourself and tell me that's not a problem.
All over the world, law enforcement, environmental activists, customs officials, and undercover investigators are fighting to stop the traffickers.
Para ese tipo de personas, el futuro no cuenta. Lo que cuenta es el beneficio inmediato.
The battle is difficult to win because of the huge profits to be made and the corruption involved.
C'est tout un système de montage avec des sociétés écrans. Là, on peut parler de système mafieux.
Can we stop the toxic tide before it is too late? Mike Anane is a Ghanaian environmental journalist and activist. He has made it his personal mission to stop the influx of e-waste to his country. He has discovered that many of the computers dumped here still bear the names of their original owners in Europe and the US.
I'm looking for the asset tax or the property tax. Yes, it gives a lot of indication and provide a clue as to who owned it, who used it.
Mike told me that he had a plan. He wanted to take his collection of tags on a journey of investigation.
The idea is to take these things back to the previous owners, the original owners. And these are e-waste that belong to people in the UK. I'll ask them questions as to how these things got to Ghana, if they have any idea. Somebody has to pay for these things because the environmental and health consequences are enormous. They are killing people here. They should be responsible.
Mike is taking several pieces of e-waste to the UK. The first one originally belonged to Leeds City Council.
Dear Mr. Councillor, my name is Mike Anand. I would like to come and see you to show you what I found and to investigate how your discarded computer equipment found its way to Ghana.
Excuse me, you can't really be blocked them. If you want to come this way with me.
Okay. I collect the acid tax of some of the e-waste that gets dumped in Ghana.
Royal College of Nursing, yes. HMS Customs at Thames Valley.
South Bank University.
South Bank University, that's in London. So you've got a fair spread of England, you know.
Let me show you the place where I found this equipment.
This is where I keep the e-waste. They have asset tags or property tags. You know, when you look at this, for instance, it says Leeds City Council. It should have been disposed of in that city of Leeds.
Terrible, huh? Terrible. No, not acceptable at all. Is this the same all over Africa? Or is there specific parts of Africa where we're having problems with it?
We have Nigeria and, of course, Ghana. Yeah, these two countries are the major countries that receive electronic waste.
We've researched as far as we can with that particular piece of waste from the serial number they can date it. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago, and as I said, at that time, I mean, the ethical, what was thought to be ethical was, we'll recondition them and give them to charities that can't afford their own computers. But I don't think anybody actually thought the thing through, that what happens when it is no longer in use.
The records of the donations no longer exist, so Councillor Blackburn can't tell Mike which computer went to which charity. The trail has gone cold. Mike tries to trace back more of the tags he has found in Ghana.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Anali. I'm trying to reach 212 regarding some recycling issues. Do you have anybody around?
Yeah, at the moment, it's in place for 212 to go into administration and be taken over by Daisy.
Mm-hmm. All recyclers involved were closed down or sold on years ago.
This number is for sale. For information, call ODEM. If your inquiry is urgent, please use our
After a whole week in the UK trying to trace back the tags, Mike still doesn't know who sent the e-waste to Ghana.
I'm very much disappointed. I have been to several places and the usual excuses has been 20 years or we give them to charity. And I find these excuses rather funny. Yeah, because it doesn't take away the problems, it doesn't take away their complicity, and it doesn't take away the fact that they are to be blamed.
Uncovering the e-waste traffic is not as simple as Mike had expected, but he is determined to continue his investigation. E-waste trafficking has been illegal since 1989, when the Basel Convention was signed, the first international treaty banning the trafficking of any kind of toxic waste. To date, 190 countries have signed it, amongst them China and Ghana. The European Union, too, has written the Basel Convention into its laws, prohibiting the export of e-waste. In other words, all EU waste should be recycled in Europe. A system has been designed. In Europe, when a consumer buys a new appliance, the purchase price includes a recycling levy. For instance, the price of a fridge includes a levy of up to 20 euros. Around 4 billion euros are collected this way in Europe every year. This money is used by the industry to run a system which collects, sorts, transports, and recycles our appliances. That's why we can hand them back for recycling for free when we discard them. Thousands of highly specialized recycling plants have been set up all over Europe. Here, the e-waste is treated without harming the workers or the environment. Professional recyclers can get a whole range of valuable materials out of our discarded appliances. But recyclers all over Europe are complaining that their plants are not running to full capacity. And the European Union estimates that at least two-thirds of European e-waste never make it to an official recycling plant. Spain is one of the worst affected countries. So what's going wrong? Belen Ramos works for OQ, Spain's biggest consumer association. She wants to find out why Spanish e-waste is not getting to the recycling plants through an experiment. Belen and her team are a installing satellite trackers inside discarded appliances that could have come from any of our homes. In total, 16 pieces have been fitted with trackers. The plan is to hand them in for recycling all over the country and see if they find their way to a recycling plant or not. Soon, all the pieces of e-waste with the hidden trackers inside are distributed all over the country. All of them are sending regular satellite signals. This morning, there is news from the city of Granada, where a computer with a tracker was handed in for recycling. The satellite picture shows clearly that the new location of the computer is an abandoned lot and not a recycling plant. In a country with 26% unemployment and paltry benefits, some have turned to e-waste theft to survive. Security cameras and metal gates failed to deter the thieves. Fences are simply cut to provide access 24 hours. The copper cone inside a TV set can be sold to a scrap dealer for €2. A fridge will yield up to €10 and a system unit €4. But theft from collection points is not the only way e-waste is disappearing. In 2011, the Spanish Environmental Police discovered that 500,000 fridges had been siphoned off the official system and dumped. The case became known as Operation Fragmento, Spain's first high-profile e-waste case. A large criminal network, which included staff at collection points, recycling plants, and transport firms, had taken the recycling levy and then illegally scrapped the fridges. Their profit, €10 million. The case is currently pending trial. The final balance of Belén's tracker experiment, only 4 of the 16 pieces made it to authorized recycling plants. All others were scrapped illegally. That's 75%. But none of Belén's trackers have appeared outside of Spain. So how does European e-waste end up in the third world? An answer can be found in France. Here, in March 2010, the gendarmerie discovered a huge warehouse full of e-waste tucked away in a small town. Captain Doblemont was in charge of the investigation. So where did all this e-waste come from, and where was it going? D3E Recyclage had collected electronics for recycling from all over the region. Clients included public institutions, hospitals, and prisons, and even the gendarmerie itself. The e-waste came flooding in for one reason. Under French law, companies have to pay for their old equipment to be recycled. But D3E offered an irresistible deal. Free recycling of monitors, which would normally have cost around €5 each to recycle. Nobody thought this was a deal too good to be true, because the paperwork provided by D3E Recyclage looked totally convincing. They even listed individual serial numbers, claiming that everything had been recycled according to the law. For several years, D3E operated calmly under the radar. Not a single inspection took place, which would have revealed that they didn't have any recycling equipment whatsoever. D3E may have only been a small company, but they were part of an international e-waste trafficking ring covering 3 continents. When Captain Doblemont discovered that the waste had left France for Belgium, he contacted Interpol for help. A huge international network began to reveal itself. The French monitors have been sold for between 50 cents and 2 euros apiece to a company in Belgium called Mobo. The investigators traced the head office of Mobo to Luxembourg. A truly international network was uncovered. Mobo and Luxembourg bought e-waste not only from France, but also from Croatia and the UK. They used a Romanian company for packing and logistics. The e-waste was exported from Holland to Hong Kong, Vietnam, and the Arab Emirates. The shareholders are based in the US, in Delaware, a notorious fiscal paradise. The French e-waste suppliers have been sentenced and their fake recycling company shut down. But Mobo continued to trade, advertising their services on sites such as Alibaba.com, where e-waste from all around the world is traded freely and without borders. Thousands of e-waste containers leave Europe every year. This not only causes environmental damage, it also affects the economy. This was a major reason why, in 2008, the European institutions in Brussels started work on a new, more stringent version of the EU e-waste directive.
10% of all the gold in the world goes to electronics, and most of it then disappears. And the same with silver, with copper.
Every year, Europe dumps millions of tons of e-waste, including the valuable resources inside.
I think everybody needs to wake up to the fact that in 20 or 30 years, the world is going to have a huge resource crisis. And Europe in particular is very vulnerable. We import 6 times more than we export.
Europe currently spends 130 billion euros a year on importing strategic metals, even though some of this demand could be covered with recycled e-waste instead. This refinery in Belgium extracts copper, tin, silver and gold from old electronics and processes them for resale. 50,000 mobile phones yield 1 kilogram of gold and 10 kilograms of silver, worth about 40,000 euros. Currently, only 1% of mobile phones are recycled in Europe. This means that we're actually sitting on a veritable mine of precious metals and valuable rare earths. In January 2012, the European Parliament passed the new e-waste directive. The new goal is to increase e-waste recycling in Europe by making it easier for consumers to hand back their waste and by keeping the waste in Europe through stricter export controls at the harbours. But how easy is it to stop an e-waste container from leaving? Mike Anane has travelled to Scotland to meet the Environmental Protection Agency.
Historically, it's been West Africa, primarily Nigeria, but over the last few years, we have noticed an increase to Ghana.
What are the usual tricks that these illegal exporters use?
For example, changing the container drop-off point to the last minute, so that we can't be there to check, or potentially having material on the first few rows of the container that are working order, but some material sitting behind that that's not working order.
Only functional second-hand equipment can legally be exported from Europe. Everything else is seized.
So do you test every single equipment for functionality?
Not every single equipment. The amount of exports that takes place and the resource, it wouldn't be cost-effective. We have to use the resources effectively.
The team use a video camera to look inside the container and to see if any of the contents look like e-waste.
You were checking a 40-footer container, but the camera was not long enough to the end of the container.
It's another indication. That's why the majority of our effort goes into the use of intelligence and the use of inspections at an earlier stage. We've already had information from that exporter to show that each of the fridges had been tested, but that was a spot check to ensure that the paperwork they'd given us matched up.
Mike is not impressed. The Scottish authorities, making the best of their resources, rely on information from the exporters themselves to stop any illegal shipments. The container was released for export soon after.
For me, I would say that the controls that I saw at the port in Scotland was not good enough. Every single item would have to be checked for functionality, particularly of the contents. If it's refrigerators, if it's television sets or computers, they would have to find out whether they are working in good working order before they're shipped or whether they're just junk.
In spite of all European laws, Europe's harbours are clearly overwhelmed by the sheer number of e-waste containers being exported. But what about a country that produces more e-waste than anyone else on the planet and hasn't banned its export? The US produces a staggering 9.5 million tons of e-waste a year. A lot of this is collected by recyclers, for instance, at so-called recycling rallies, where people are invited to donate their discarded electronics to charity. What most people don't know is that a lot of US e-waste is headed straight for the third world.
If you were to go out on the street and ask people, what do you think happens when you take your old computer to a recycler, they'll just say it gets recycled. Very few know that most of these so-called recyclers in the United States don't recycle, they just export.
The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz. Every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to your program for a better life. Today we are going to talk about two evil traits, two bad moral traits from the viewpoint of every individual, not only Islam, not only Muslims, but also according to every religion that could be very bad. I would like to speak about jealousy and then arrogance. Jealousy is a state where one cannot bear to see others enjoying certain blessings. It is just like a fire within an individual. It keeps burning. Jealousy is a fire that not only burns the individual himself, but also other people are affected by that fire. So, as a result, such an individual who is jealous, whose life is affected by jealousy, will go as far as to try to take away any blessing that others have been granted. And if they end up failing, then they will try to hurt that person in other ways. You know, the person who is jealous does not want other people to live in peace, to live in prosperity. Since he himself does not have that blessing, he does not want other people to have the same blessing as well. In reality, a jealous person is always trying to take things away from others instead of trying to improve themselves towards reaching a higher level. There is no doubt that jealousy is a serious moral disease with very serious social and spiritual consequences. From the perspective of psychological and spiritual well-being, a jealous person ends up harming themselves to a greater extent than the individual whom they are jealous of. And this is something we can say people have experienced in their lives, and we can see concrete examples of such people in our day-to-day life. And obviously it is better that such a person should try his best to grow and progress beyond what they see in others, rather than simply trying to pull them down to their own level. These people should broaden their mind, should broaden their heart, in order to be able to tolerate others and to be able to see others' happiness, to see others' felicity.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Al-hasid mudhirrun bi nafsihi qabla an yadhurra bil mahsud. This is a saying from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, who said that the jealous one ends up harming himself before harming the object of his jealousy. Now, this is a proven fact. The person who is actually jealous, he is not at rest. He is restless. He is burning like fire, and that fire constantly burns him, constantly irritates him. So the person who is jealous, he is harming himself more than he harms other people. Sometimes he is unable to harm other people, but he harms himself. So it's very important to stop being jealous. It's very important to have an open mind and to have a broad mind and to be tolerant and to be able to see others enjoying certain blessings. It's very important. Just as Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam said, the jealous person ends up harming himself before harming the object of his jealousy. That is what we wanted to talk about, jealousy. Of course, more can be said, because there are many hadiths, many traditions from our Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him and his family, and from his noble family members. And we are not going to touch on any other hadiths from the Holy Prophet and his family. We are going to move on to another hadith, and that hadith is about arrogance. It has been reported from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam that he said, there is no person who acts arrogantly towards others except for a weakness which he senses within himself. So with this hadith, we understand that, of course, arrogance is a negative characteristic of the soul, because every bad habit can also be created and developed within a person himself. Now, good and bad habits, both of them can be together. Some people can be, for example, generous, some people can be jealous, some people can be arrogant, some can be humble and very submissive. Some people can be greedy, others can be generous. So these are different habits of the soul. These are different dispositions or characteristics of the soul which can be developed over time. Some of these habits are developed as a result of a person living in a family. That family inculcates that habit within that individual. And sometimes this habit is grown up by the individual himself. He grows up to be either generous or either greedy. A person can develop good habits by making conscious efforts.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Today it has been shown through psychological studies that the root of arrogance and prideful behavior can be found in a feeling of inferiority that people possess within themselves. People who suffer from this inferiority complex try to use this misguided technique to show themselves as being superior to others. Nevertheless, this type of behavior only adds to their inferiority, because people recognize them for who they are. You know, it is through their conduct, it is through their behavior that people know. And of course, with a person's conduct, others can easily understand whether that person is arrogant, whether that person is humble, or what action speaks louder. In the hadith of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wa salam, ما من رجل تجبر أو تكبر إلا لذلة يجدها في نفسه. There is no person who acts arrogantly towards others except because of weakness which he senses within himself. So this type of behavior, arrogant behavior, only adds to the individual's inferiority. Over time, of course, this type of behavior, or this kind of behavior, actually increases the people's hate and disgust towards him. This is a psychological issue. So on the other hand, people who have faith are affected by a particular innate state which inclines them towards modesty and humbleness. People of good faith, people who have faith in Iman, in Allah, in His Prophet, of course, they are the ones who are submissive, they are the ones who are humble, they are the ones who show humility and humbleness as a part and parcel of their life. So these two different characteristics are there. Obviously, those who are arrogant and those who are jealous, these are two evil or negative characteristics of the soul which must be removed and which we must fight. Otherwise, we cannot live a comfortable life. We will not live a life of peace, and we will not live a life of tranquility. That's all for this session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.